Hello, everybody in the U.S. and around the world. You are on Baseball Outside the Box. Welcome, everybody. I don't know if it's morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you're at around the world, because we have over 100 countries which follow the podcast and also the live streaming on YouTube. We're currently streaming live on YouTube. Peter Caliendo, if you got any questions, type them in the YouTube part, and we will ask them. We're also streaming live on Facebook here in Chicago, 7 p.m. Central Time. Hey, folks, thank you, everybody, for all you do to share the show. That's the reason we are in over 100 countries. Can't thank you enough. Thank you to the Lineup Media Group for hosting us. And we have another exciting show for you. We're excited about this one. It's kind of up my alley because I think it's the foundation of our game. And this young man is doing so much in the game, and especially at the most important level. Everybody can talk about Major League Baseball, college, high school. Look, great coaches, great programs. I love them all. We do a great job, not only in the U.S., but around the world. But we all know the foundation of sport is at the grassroots level. Without the grassroots level, you have nothing. If you don't think long-term, you don't develop the parents, the coaches, and the players, you help them all together, you don't have a long-term program where kids play the game as long as possible. We don't want kids to play it short-term. So again, folks, thanks for joining us on Baseball Outside the Box. Our guest today, Justin Sherman. Let me tell you, why? Great story. Here's a young man who started his own business at 13 years old, folks. He also had a speech delay problem, which, as you know, as a young kid, you can get teased at school. There could be issues. You got to overcome all this. He started his own business, his own disc jockey business at 13. That's amazing in itself. And then later on, he decides to get into and start his own baseball business, working with very young kids, starting at 6 years old. A lot more to this story that we're going to tell you about, because we got some connections, baseball connections together, some great friends, some of his mentors I know real well, I've had on the show. So I think it's going to be an exciting show. So let me welcome right now from Westchester, New York, Justin Sherman. What's up, Justin?
Coach Peter, I said this earlier, I'm going to say it again. It's a tremendous honor to be with you. You are phenomenal. You are a gem in the game of baseball. You've given so much to the game, and I'm such a big fan of yours. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I appreciate it. I didn't know I had many fans, but I guess I'll take it. You know, and it helps your ego a little bit. And I really appreciate it. Helps my ego, I should say.
Sure.
You got to have it. As my age, as you get older, it's nice to be recognized a little bit. Because sometimes, be honest with you, Justin, once in a while it can happen. In the future, it'll happen to everybody. Sometimes people forget about you. I've got some great mentors, and I know you do, and I've got some that passed away. And one thing I did see, and it's not a negative, but I did see it in a little bit, and that is sometimes we tend to forget our mentors. And that's one thing I tried not to do. You know, I had a mentor, 97 years old, always try to stay in touch with him, see how he's doing, went to see him, you know, when he was in a home. We can't forget the people that have helped us. So I think it'd be a great lead, and then we'll get into your story too, because I think it's a great story. Lead it into some of your mentors. Let's talk about them, some of the guys and gals that you learned from.
So there's so many, and you've interviewed so many phenomenal, talented coaches. I mean, one of them, the obvious one to me, close to my heart, is Eric Holtz, the head baseball coach for the Israel Olympic baseball team. And he really is a big mentor of mine. I look at him like a relative. He's taught me so many lessons, not only just about baseball, but leadership, perseverance, as an entrepreneur, fellow entrepreneur. I mean, learning from him, you know, he's built an unbelievable reputation and company. So I know you had him. He's awesome. Coach Darren Gurney's fantastic. You know, I actually worked for him about 10 years ago. Can't believe him. Actually, maybe even more than that. But, you know, the game is somehow we're all connected one way or another. But those two definitely that you've had on your show are my mentors.
Absolutely. Greg, a little acknowledgement out there to Coach Gurney, Coach Eric. Hey, listen, the other thing, which I was going through your information, I was just stunned. And I think it's important to cover this part because, you know, as a young kid, you had a speech delay. So I want you to explain what speech delay is and how you overcame it. And did you go through some issues with it? Because a lot of young kids nowadays, you know, get teased, and not just even when I was a kid, you know, some kids would get teased for certain reasons. So talk about that a little bit.
So this was very early on in my life. I was 4 or 5 years old, and I basically, couldn't really speak properly. I mean, words that I would say would not come out clearly. I mean, I barely could even really speak proper any diction at all. And it definitely, even later on, it's always been later on in my life, I've always had that kind of subconscious like chip on my shoulder, almost like a step. I always felt that one step behind. And again, as you could probably attest to it, you know, that's an advantage a lot of the times. But it definitely was difficult, a lot of learning issues, IEP, you know, we'll dive into that a little bit more. But, you know, the whole deal, learning issues, speech delay. But again, I feel like later on in my life now, it's definitely been an advantage.
Well, you know, and I'm going to ask you about that because I'm going to get into the business you started. But here's the other interesting aspect is, you know, at 13 years old, I mean, you sound, you know, not quite like Mark Cuban, because Mark Cuban started, I think, his entrepreneur business at 7 years old, 7 or 8, but pretty close. At 13, you decided to start a disc jockey service. Talk about that, because, you know, people are afraid, you know, to start their own businesses at times. Here you are starting it at 13 years old. Talk about how you did that.
So in Westchester, New York, you know, definitely there's some money around in Westchester, and I'm fully aware of that. A lot of big bar and bar mitzvahs. This was the bar bar mitzvah scene when I was 12, 13 years old. I'd go with my buddies, and, you know, basically we love, for some reason, we love, just like the DJ, how, you know, he or she was in control of the party and leading the kids. My buddy and I, in his basement, one of my buddies in his basement, we would, you know, play with a boombox and pretend to be the DJs. And we would throw parties for like the neighborhood, no money, nothing. But we were just like, you know what? We should do this. We should just like start our own business. So our first gig was a 5-year-old birthday party. Actually, ironically, one of the kid is now working for me as a baseball coach, who we did the 5-year-old birthday party. But long story short, we made like $50 between, you know, 2-3 of us. And we were like jumping for joy. It was like the best money we ever made. And we just loved the idea of being in charge and leading a crowd and seeing the kids be happy, even at a young age of 13, 14. We were doing like clubs in Manhattan at 15 years old. It's pretty hysterical, but you know, it was a phenomenal experience, life experience.
And talk about a life experience, what carries into your business, because you started as an entrepreneur in baseball and all of a sudden you've been in business 8-9 years. But prior to that, you also went through another adversity, which I think can help a lot of young people. And that is, you got cut in high school baseball. You didn't start playing, I believe, till varsity.
Correct. So like so many of your wonderful guests that you've had on your podcast, played professional baseball, played for the Cubs. I saw Coach Anthony on your podcast. I was the type of player that just had a scratch and claw to just barely make my high school baseball team. And I got cut from my junior varsity baseball team. And the moral of the story is I ended up playing in college, SUNY Purchase, nice Division III school, coach there, captain there. The idea of pursuing the potential, that's the moral of the story here. And I'm assuming we're going to dive into it more, but it did not come easy to me at all. I had a scratch and claw.
But because of that scratching and clawing, you know, and maybe because you got cut, because I can remember I got cut a few times, it made me a little bit more hungry. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to, you know, personally, me, I didn't have that much talent. You know, in other words, I didn't run very fast. I didn't throw very hard even as an infielder. I didn't have great bat speed. So I had to overcome it another way. So you had to go through some of those issues. So how did you overcome some of these issues? What did you do to all of a sudden make it varsity and then go on to college and find a college to play at?
So very quick, funny story. As soon as I got cut from the junior varsity baseball team, my mom was picking me up the next day. And I was walking to her car in high school. And in the parking lot, I saw the JV coach. So I said, you know what? I could go the other way, or I could walk up to him and just ask him, like, what can I do to make the varsity team? Yeah. Just genuine question. So I walked up to him, and I could have swore he thought I was going to, like, punch him in the face or something. I said, Coach, just genuine question, you know, thank you for the opportunity. What are things I could do to improve to make the varsity baseball team? And he told me hitting, pitching, whatever. The bottom line is I had to work harder. I did not deserve to make that team. So I just did more and ended up making the varsity team. But the moral of the story is like, you got to do more. I just did more. And I think a lot of the times, especially in my business, in our business, the training business, obviously we have to learn the mechanics and have great coaches like yourself and wise wisdom, but how about just do more? How much more are you doing? So it was a great learning lesson. And also the fact that I went up to the coach, I mean, I think today, a lot of the times we have parents emailing coaches. How about the kid ask the coach, what can I do? You know, that shows that that you're out there and you're confident. I mean, obviously it's difficult to do at that age, but you know, that's something that should be taught.
You know, I had to learn it the quick way. Cause I was cut in high school and, had to go through that. And it was interesting because, you know, my parents were Italian and, you know, they didn't know much about baseball and they certainly were not going to get involved in it. My dad would have been, was the type that if you didn't make it, like you said, then work harder, do something smarter, make it somehow, but don't complain about it. And certainly don't ask us to, you know, to come help you talk to the coach. Now we'll help you if you want to train, but we're not going to help you talk to the coach. You got to do that on your own. I think that's great advice. But let's look at the skills. Okay. I didn't throw well. I didn't have much bat speed and I didn't run well. I'm not sure about your skills, but what did you do to overcome some of your skills? Cause you had to have some skills that didn't stand out. So what did you do specifically to maybe change something so the coach noticed it?
It's a great question. So, you know, there's a great team in Westchester, a great area called Mamaroneck. I don't know how familiar you are with Mamaroneck and Coach Schiaparelli, mm-hmm. Legend. And I see what I would see in the summer and in that spring, I would watch them in the summers and like even late spring that all these players would do, they were state champions. It's just straight up hit all day, hit barrel ball, 200 balls a day. So I said, you know what, if I'm just going to 10X my efforts, nothing different, just 10X my efforts of whatever I'm doing. There's no secret sauce, just 10X efforts. That's what I said to myself, just do more. And you know, I ended up being a pretty solid hitter. I mean, you know, led the conference in college in RBIs and, all conference, the bottom line, definitely hitting was the thing that turned it around for me.
You know, it's interesting because when you say 10X, you know, it sounds like, you know, I've been all over, as you know, the world and been all over Latin America. That's exactly what they do. Japan is exactly what they do. The Japanese, if you take 50 ground balls, they'll take 250 of them. If you're running, you know, half an hour, they're running an hour and a half. I mean, they just outdo everybody and everything. And I bring this up because I want to ask you about this. In the efforts of the things you worked on, now all of a sudden we can speed up that process a little bit because back then we didn't have the technology we have now that we can kind of circumvent less, you know, make less mistakes. I guess what I'm saying and identify what we can do well and what we're not doing well. We can do that a lot quicker now. We didn't have that back then. So how much easier is it now when you got the technology to help you out as a player and as a coach?
So as a player, I mean, I think even 12 years ago, 10 years ago, video, just straight up video, no Rap Soto or Hit Tracks or anything like that. Just straight up looking at your swing and making corrections, I think is gold. I mean, kids as young as 9 years old could be doing this and should be doing this. And I tell this to my students all the time, just straight up put an iPhone, get a tripod. Everyone has an iPhone at this age, which is crazy to me. At 9 years old, you have an iPhone. And just record yourself. I mean, you really could get so much out of that. That's what I would do. I mean, I'd have my buddies just record my swing. I'd record their swing and just watch. But I mean, today, a lot of what I use, I mean, I know the whole, you know, a lot of coaches that you probably have on use the Rap Soto and the Hit Tracks, which is phenomenal. And, you know, this might be a good segue, but the students that I really refocus on as just-in-time baseball is ages like 6 to 10 and even as young as 5 to 10. And we really stick with, you know, it's the eye test for us. I guess you could say that's old school, but I don't think it's old school.
No, but you're right, because at that age, you know, you don't want to put too much in their heads also. I mean, and you know, we're going to talk about that, because here's what's amazing. Here's the first question I'm going to have for you, because I want to get into your business too. That I was going to get to that, but since you mentioned it, I think we'll segue in this area. You know, what's for parents out there and for players, what's too young? Because, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, Justin. I look at T-ball. I go out and watch T-ball, and I, you know, my first impression is, okay, look, if the kids are having fun, fantastic, keep doing it. I'm not sure how much fun they're having at T-ball. I've got a different opinion of it. I got a different opinion of what we should be doing with young kids. But I want to get your take on this, because you're working with these kids right now, today, for over 8 years. When should a kid just start if he just likes it, he or she? And where do you start with a five-year-old?
It's a great question. I love this question. So I take a lot of pride in this age bracket, ages as young as 5 to 7 to 8 years old. I would say that core. And it's my job, it's our job as coaches to make them just love being at the field and building their confidence. Now, these might sound like cliche statements, but it's just the truth. I think sometimes with throwing and catching and hitting, obviously we have to cover all that. When, as far as catching, if we're talking about mechanics.
Hang on 1 second, Justin. Yeah. I'm just going to interrupt you. I apologize, but I did this for a reason, because you mentioned something, and I want to dive into that a little bit. Okay, we want to make sure that they want to be there, and we're going to do things to make sure that they want to be there. And I know a lot of people use the word fun. So I want to dive into, what does that mean? What do you do different than others that makes you successful and keeps these kids playing the game? What do you do to make it interesting for them, and why they want to come back?
So two things I try to focus on when I'm talking to a parent coach at this age. I'm very fortunate to be speaking at a lot of these little leagues, at T-ball leagues all over Westchester, New York. And I say to them, I said, first and foremost, compete. Kids, even as young as 5, 6 years old, anything you do, whether it's picking up a ball, whether it's throwing a ball against a fence, or all trying to line up and throw a ball and hit a target, or whatever the drill is, doesn't matter. Make it a competition. That's number one. I do think we you know, and I'm sure, I think I'm, you may agree with me on this one, that we're so quick to give the participation trophy, which is 100% important, but it's good to teach your kids to compete. That sure doesn't mean be crazy about it, but you know, your kids should be competing. That's going to engage interest and focus.
They're competing amongst themselves, not necessarily against somebody else at that age.
Correct. So to clarify, you know, partner ground ball activities.
Yeah.
You know, winning team gets baseball cards, and they can all get baseball cards. Kids love it. I'll give out the old packs of cards. They love it. But like just those types of things. And you reiterate, look, do I care about winning? And I say this to all my players at that age. I say, do I care about winning? No, I care about us having fun and competing. You know, that is something that you reiterate to the child. So if they do lose, who cares? And I say that, who cares? But I do think competing enforces focus. Competition within competition as young as 5 years old is very important, and it's healthy. It's not negative. Another thing is also, I think the devil that I see, and God bless all parent coaches, is the underbelly of youth baseball, but standing around. You know, I think that really makes kids hate it at that age. And it's not the game. The game, you and I could both agree, because we're both biased, it's the most beautiful sport in the world. It's a game within a game. So we have to keep the kids moving. So competition, keep them moving. Competition, keep them moving. Those are the two principles I really try to instill when I speak to parent coaches.
All right, so let's start at that. Let's start with a 5 and 6 or even 7-year-old that are teaching hitting. Again, not an easy task. You know, they don't have a lot of balance, or, you know, they're not really sure, you know, how to hold a bat. There's a lot of things that they don't really realize. Where do you start? Where's a parent, even if a parent was working with their son or daughter, where do they start?
So if I were to talk about a parent coach's setting, meaning a T-ball game, if you got that 30-minute window to work with your team, because you really don't, these parents, some of them are getting off the train. Well, maybe not now because of COVID, but getting off the train or wherever. They just want to help their kids. They just want to be involved with the team. I mean, something as simple as just with tennis balls, they're on a knee. You can have two parents, five hitters, so they're all hitting, and you're just rapid fire. Who cares if they miss? They're just going rapid fire, no standing around. Again, contact, we're emphasizing contact here, and obviously the parent has to be on a knee, so on eye level. That's very big. I see a lot of parents that are up top and not necessarily an eye level, and that will diminish confidence. So they're on a knee and no one's standing around. Rapid fire. You don't even tell them when they're, you know, when they're getting the pitch. They're just ready to hit the baseball. So those are some drills, cones, and everyone's hitting off a tee. I just always think to myself, because there's tons of YouTube drills, and obviously you have a library of gold, and I watch it all the time. But, you know, basically whatever it is to be creative, to not stand around, because that is the devil of a practice for a 5 to 7 year old.
So it, you know, if you're a coach working with young kids, it's important that you try to recruit a lot of parents, and the parents really don't need to know a lot, because what you're going to show them basically what to do. Cause like you said, they're going to be on a knee throwing some baseballs or tennis balls. Or so the more parents you have, the more individualized work there is within that practice.
100%. I mean, they could, so I say this to a lot of my just in time coaching staff. I say this to them all the time. When you see them once a week, for you, you could do the same drill every week or two or three drills for 4 weeks with a kid. Same thing for a parent coach's practice. You could stick with two drills. And if they're not standing around and they're moving and they're accelerating and reaching their own potential, if little Johnny hasn't touched a ball and then in 3 weeks he starts touching a ball, that's phenomenal. So as long as it doesn't have to be crazy. You don't have to know anything about baseball. The only thing that should be done, no matter what era we're in, is the kids need to be moving, because that is the devil. I call it the devil.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to it. The key, you said it, and that is that individual player needs to get better individually. That's when they feel good about themselves. You know, that just if they didn't hit the ball, now they hit it on the ground. That's a great accomplishment, right? If they're hitting a lot of them in the ground and all of a sudden now they hit a line drive, that's an accomplishment. And that's another. So I love that. I love to hear that. You know, and practice is tough because, you know, you got a lot of 5, 6, 7 year olds. You're hoping to recruit parents, obviously. You got to keep them interested. Like you said, you got to keep them moving. And one of the toughest things in practice, and I know coaches struggle with this, and rightfully so, because you can have, you know, when you get to high school, these kids know how to play catch. You get the pro ball, they know how to play catch. Sure, you got to make them quicker and better at that level. But you and I have worked with the 5 and 6 year olds. This ain't, it's not catch. Sometimes it's throw and fetch. So we've got to reduce it somehow, because we got that fear factor involved in it too for young kids. So what do you do? Just, you know, I know we're on video and on audio on YouTube and also on the podcast, but what do you do to kind of reduce that fear factor and help kids to understand how to catch a baseball? It's one thing throwing it. It's a lot tougher to catch it.
So I believe sometimes, actually a lot of the times, a glove could be a distraction.
I'm with you.
I think from 5 to 7 years old, you take the glove off. I think you just focus on getting comfortable with a wiffle ball, with a tennis ball, even by themselves. I'll tell parent coaches, go to Amazon, order poly spots or cones, and let them just focus on, and this is where you become the facilitator and they're not standing around. You could do multiple self-catching patterns, I guess you could say, of just let them just throw the ball up and catch and focus on catching the ball above their eyes. And you'd be amazed on literally doing that for 3 to 5 minutes. That does more than them having a catch.
Love it. I agree with you 100%. The other part I want to ask you about, because I think, you know, we've talked about this on the show, but it's always great to get different opinions and different things that you might do to help this. You know, there's that, what they call, and I know they call it windows of trainability, and that is between, again, the ages of 6 to 12. That's where you've got to develop the skills. That's where you got to develop your hand-eye coordination, your quickness or your movement patterns, you know, how you move your feet and all that. So explain maybe a few things that you might do to get kids to use their feet more, because that's fun too. Kids love to run. They love to run. So if you incorporate some kind of drills with running, but skills in running. Is there something you do there to keep their movement going?
Another great question. So again, I'll go back to the same drill, and you can have multiple variations. Again, the key here is they're working on catching. The balls aren't going all over the place. They're spread out. And you could just say, and this could be part of the sequencing of catching. Okay, everyone, we're now going to run and catch. Okay, so I know we're talking throwing, but.
No, we'll love it. Love
going it. Back to the catching, I mean, add in a clap. I mean, and I tell this to my staff, you know, we think it's like no brainer. Like, yeah, clap, catch. But yeah, we're in charge of their development, and they don't do that. They don't do this at home. No. So teach them clap, catch, spatial awareness, moving while catching. I mean, this is gold for development. And that's why I say we're a youth development company through baseball. I mean, we're instituting almost physical education principles through baseball.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, I'm even thinking you can go sideways catching, backwards catching, running.
Yeah.
And then think about it, how much fun that is for kids, right? Because they're doing it by themselves. I mean, doing it as a group, but they're doing it individually. And they're learning, you know, one thing I did throw in there, I always told kids, you know, if you could catch 4 or 5 of them in a row, I always ask them the question, you know, is it too easy for you? And if you know, they're going to tell you, yeah, it's easy because you just caught 5 in a row, right? Well, then what are you going to do? I always ask them, what are you going to do about it? You know, how can you get better? And their kids are smart. They'll say, well, I'll throw it higher. Well, go ahead, throw it higher. So you miss it, right? I mean, at least you know, if you don't throw it any higher, you're never going to know what depth you could catch it at, right? So that you can incorporate, like you said, so many different things out of this.
100%. There's so many variations. Excuse me. And I love it because we think they need to start having a catch at 6 years old. It's good to have a catch. And you'll do that in the backyard with a parent or relative or whatever. And you'll progress to that. But I think it's more beneficial for an individual, you can have 12 kids on their own and just do multiple variations of this drill and then progress to the catch. You can even do it with throwing. I mean, I do a game where you have a ball on a tee. I mean, this is something that's not new. Again, anything that I'm saying is stuff that has been done and we all take from each other. But the key here is they're not standing around and they're getting their work in. That is the biggest thing from ages 5 to 8 years old. I tell that to all my guys.
Yeah, I'm envisioning when you said that, I'm envisioning, you know, you could put in 8 cones, you know, every kid.
Or one ball on a tee, or, you know, I even do where it's 2 tees and you have a team of 5, whoever knocks, if you knocked off the ball, your team, you know, the Mets get a point, the Yankees get a point, they knock their ball off the tee, they're working on the step. The flex cue words are obviously key. I'm all about the cues.
And before we get in, I want to ask about throwing with folks. Do me a favor, go to justintimebaseball.com. Check it out. Everything's on the website there, and also how to get a hold of Justin. Throwing is critical, obviously, but when you're real young, you know, where do you start with that? I mean, just some basic ideas, some basic drills maybe. How do you start the young kids in the understanding how to throw correctly?
Totally. So again, I think sometimes the ball could be a distraction, mm-hmm. you know? So if I'm first starting with a 5-year-old student in our program, let's just work on the cues. So I'll say when we're throwing a punch in karate or football, all obviously the kids can relate, or shooting a bow and arrow, you have to separate. So I call it a flex. So I say step, flex, and then what do you do when you get in the car with mommy? You buckle your seatbelt because you got to finish. So I'll never say, all right, step, throw. You gotta make it easy and understandable, which I know you understand that better than anybody. But just fun cue words to keep it interesting, and they'll understand. Oh, what do you do? Check for understanding. What is this called? Step, flex, buckle the seatbelt. Why do we buckle the seatbelt? You know, those are cues that I teach right away. And then I'll put the ball in their hands. So I do it without a ball. Progressions are key. Without a ball, put the ball in their hands. And then I'll just straight up put a ball on a cone. Sorry, ball on a tee. And just we work on that nonstop. Maybe 3 weeks straight in our programs.
You know, that's a big deal because unfortunately for 5, 6, 7-year-olds. And folks, we're talking to Justin Sherman. we're talking about, he owns Just-in-Time Baseball in Westchester, New York. You got to understand, he's working with kids 5 to 9 years old, basically 8 years old. You want to be a better coach. I could tell you from experience, because I started at Mickey Owen Baseball School with our youngest kids there, not quite five, but right around 7, 8, 9. And, you know, you are a much better teacher working with young kids, because it becomes much easier to teach your older guys and gals when you've worked with this age group. And I bring it up because here we are, you know the baseball. Everybody says, oh, it should be easy to throw a baseball. Well, you know, a five-year-old throwing a baseball is like you and I throwing a, what we call a 12-inch softball here in Chicago, the bigger ball. So they're throwing a big ball, which right. their hand can't grip it well. But so what's the key there when they grip the ball? What is that, what, for those, especially that age group, at least so they can hold it?
So that's a very good question. I don't think it's talked about enough in general. And obviously I'm not surprised because of your baseball mind. I like adding the third finger. So at that age, you add the third finger. So you got the four seam grip, and then you just add that ring finger. Mm-hmm. Comfortability, confidence, instead of them trying to choke the ball, I'll just add that third finger. And as they get older, and I explained that to them, I said, look, your hand is growing. We're going to add this finger. As you get older and your fingers get bigger, as you get bigger and stronger, we go to the four seam grip. And I teach that. Again, it's really comfortability. The four seam, yes. Is it critical at 5, 6, 7 years old that they hold a four seam grip? No. I just want them to feel comfortable and not palm the ball. To me, that's what I think is more important than anything.
Yeah, and the key is being comfortable. And one thing for your coaches out there that are looking on YouTube, think about it. If you can't hold the ball correctly, your hand is naturally going to hold it this way. Well, we know that's not how you come up and throw a baseball, right? You don't come up this way. You want it fingers on top of the ball, right? And I think that does help because, you know, if you've got a good grip, you're not going to do this. You're going to be able to hold it this way. But if you feel you can't hold it this way, what's your hand going to do naturally? Your body is going to overcome it. But your body's going to know, I'm going to drop the ball. So they're going to turn their hand. And now they're going to come up this way. So I agree with you. I think that's awesome. Again, small things that make a huge difference in throwing. The next aspect, once they've got the grip, they got to be able to throw the ball. What's the body have to do? Because the body's got to do something to get in position to throw it. What's the right way, the body position, or the right position the body should get into, I should say?
So I will say, once we've established where the feet should be, where our hand should be, I say by our chest, and we work on the flex, I go back with the throwing with the buckle of the seatbelt. I mean, I think that's a fantastic cue because they understand that when they buckle, they're finishing. Okay. So I see so many, I see kids, and I know you do too. I've seen students at 16 that don't get that concept. And that's not that they didn't get it at 16, it's because they didn't learn at 6 years old. So you have to work backwards. So yeah. The idea of finishing a throw is so critical at a 6-year-old level, 7-year-old level, at that development stage. So I keep it really simple like that. I keep it that simple, coach.
Yeah, we told you folks again, justintimebaseball.com. And I was supposed to probably ask you this at the beginning, but since I mentioned your business, people are probably wondering, Justin Time, why would you call a baseball academy Justin Time? I want you to tell the folks how you got that name.
So my mom will love this. I mean, basically that's how I came out of the womb, not to get all graphic.
On time.
Just in time. So, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, learning from great mentors like yourself, like Coach Eric Holtz, who's a wonderful guiding light in my life. I've been doing this for years, for a good amount of years now. I can't believe I'm even saying this, like 8 years, but Justin Time Baseball, the actual company, not just Justin Sherman giving lessons, but Justin Time Baseball, about a year old now. We were thinking of a name and this and that. I'm like, just in time, play on words, just in time for baseball.
So. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Keep it simple too. Talk to parents. I'm going to get back to a little bit about practice, but talk to parents because two things. One, how parents should be acting at games. And two, and I get it, it's not real competitive at the 5 to 8 year old level, but you know, sometimes they are playing T-ball or whatever, that, you know, maybe coach pitch or something, and maybe they don't have a great game that, or a great day that day. They don't hit the ball at all. Maybe they struck out a couple times, you know, that they got to go home with their parents, right? So talk about that ride home also. So two things, the field, if there are games going on, you know, what's proper, a proper way to really behave at games, and why? It's not just the behavioral aspect, but why? And then also that ride home.
So there's a great coach that I follow, and I was listening to him. His name is Coach Duke Baxter. I don't know if you know Duke Baxter, but he's in New Jersey, and I could connect you with him. But he had a great line, and I loved it, and I stole it, because that's like the line, good artists copy, great artists steal. We all steal from each other. He said, when you're in the car, when you're at the field, you put your baseball parent coaching hat on. When you're in the car, you put your actual parent hat on. Two different hats. And I love that, because it really is separate. Because at the end of the day, you and I are so fortunate to be in this game, the business of baseball. I mean, it's just like a blessing for both of us. And to be speaking to you right now is a real honor, more than you even know. But I think it's so important to understand that it is a game. This is a game. And, you know, we love our kids. You know, every parent I speak to loves their kids. And it's all, you know, we want our kids to succeed so badly, so it gets in the way. But we have to understand it's a game. We have to understand it's a game. I know I'm saying like cliche things here, but it's just so true. It's the basic fundamentals. And, you know, when you're at the game, if you strike out, get them next time. When you hit a home run, excellent job. Love you, hug you. Great job. Move on to the next one. I always try to tell parents a great mentality is, okay, great job, or you struck out, whatever. On to the next one. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Because baseball is like life. That's why baseball is the best game in the world.
Yeah, and you educate parents. So I'm assuming that, yeah, but, you know, you have that parent meeting, or maybe even parent-player meeting, depending on the situation. And I always wonder, you know, that parent meeting. I know a lot of parents, especially in the U.S., but not all over the world. A lot of parents in the U.S. have played the game. You know, so sometimes they, you know, it's natural. They played the game, so they think they know the game real well. Well, there's a difference between playing the game and teaching the game. Huge difference. You and I and many coaches understand that, teachers. But the skill of the game is one thing. You know, the failure of the game, that's really what they have to understand, because they really got to comprehend how hard, if you haven't played the game at any level, you really don't understand how difficult it is. The failure aspect's tremendous. Now, and I'm not trying to throw a negative aspect out there. It's not like we want people to think that this is a negative game. It's just a game that you fail more than you succeed. And when you do, even though you failed, you can, you know, as you know, in hitting, 3 out of 10 times is a great success, right? In most aspects of life, 3 out of 10 is a failure. So talk to the parents about that, why that's so important to understand. So when their kids fail, they know how to deal with it.
So I know you know this, coach, but like the great Steve Springer says, sometimes the idea of getting a hit is a bonus. What is success in baseball? And I tell this to all parents. Success, obviously, is helping your team win. That's number one. That's number one. But what is success? How about like you fought off a lot of pitches, even though you struck out? Like, wow, you had a 12-pitch at bat. Okay, you struck out, but that's success. So the term failure, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do to be quote unquote successful. Whether it's a man on second base and you're moving the runner over, that's success. To me, that's less than two outs or one out or no outs, man on second, you move them over. You should praise your child, like, great job. You move that runner over. That's a success for your team, because that's helping your team. It's all about the team, because that's what life is about. It's about teamwork. So those types of principles, again, very basic, but I think sometimes we use the word failure a lot in baseball, but let's redefine what success is in baseball. How about the fact that you missed 8 balls in a row in your practice, but you, the last couple, you started catching them? Yeah. Success. So if we tweak it and reverse psychology it, you'll see a lot, because that's positivity, right? That's where that. Because kids want success. Everyone wants success. We want to boost our self-esteem. I think that's a big thing. And I tell that to parent coaches. Don't worry about the idea of getting a hit. How about like get a good pitch and hit it hard? That's success. You get a hit, that's a bonus.
Great stuff. And I love it. I just put an X right through failure. So let's just throw failure right out the window. Let's not even use that word. And let's look at, like you said, all the positives. And I think we do forget a lot of positives because there's so many great things kids can do in a game, right? I mean, fielding, throwing, bunting, hitting, running, taking an extra base. I mean, there's so many things you can do, blocking a ball, not letting an extra run. I mean, there's so much. And you're right. We got to look at how the things that they do really well. You know, the other aspect of all this is parents can actually, what do you tell parents? Because they can actually help their sons and daughters because of the fact that maybe some teams only practice once a week, maybe two. Well, that may not be enough. So what can parents do, you know, to help their kids a little bit?
So, like I said earlier, if you just do one or two drills, if you know one or two drills and you have a feel, a good comfortability about it, and you're with your son or daughter in the backyard and you could perfect that once or twice a week or whatever it is on your own, that's success. It doesn't have to be, it will not be the fancy drills that's going to accelerate you. It's going to be the frequency. So if you could do the one or two great positive drills that are leading towards their own potential, that's the victory. That's the victory. And I also think it's important to, and again, I'm giving myself a plug here. On March 1st, I'm actually doing a parent coaches clinic, and we're going to talk about all of this. It's going to be a virtual event. Should be pretty cool. But, you know, these are the things I'm going to talk about. But, like, it doesn't have to be – I'm going to use the word sexy. It should just be – one or two or three things, do it really well. Look at a guy like Derek Jeter, right? Like there's nothing fancy about him. He just does the great little, be perfect at the basics. I think it was Vincent Lombardi. He was brilliant at the basics.
Yeah.
Be brilliant at the basics. So it could be two or three drills to answer your question. I know I just gave you a long answer, but one or two or three drills with all the knowledge of, with all the technology and great mentors and coaches like yourself that has hundreds of drills. I have, you know, we all have stuff going on, but bottom line is pick one or two of those and perfect it. And then enforce that for your kid. I mean, like, it's gotta be on their own too. So it's gotta be, you can't just wait for your parents to get off the train or whatever, but self-facilitating, help your child with just one or two drills and perfect them for those, you know, 3-4 days. And it could be 5 minutes a day.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be an hour a day. You're right. And you mentioned it earlier. You said 10 times you did it. You know, I mean, if a parent just rolled ground balls for 10 minutes every day or 5 minutes a day,
amazing,
you're going to get better just by doing that. And the other part you brought up, I think, is critical. And I want coaches and players and parents to understand this in the U.S. and around the world. You know, don't forget the fundamentals. Stay with the fundamentals because that makes you successful. Yes, you're going to you want to do other things. I get it. But you got time for that. If you're real good at the fundamentals, you will succeed at this game. The Japanese have proven that. That, you know, they stick to the basics and they do an incredible job. Hey, listen, the other part, when we talk about practice, I'm going to bounce back to practice a little bit. Some of the fundamentals of running a practice, you mentioned it, fun. But when someone says fun, you always like to hear how you have fun. And you mentioned that, but mention some other things that are important because, you know, how long you practice for. We're talking about 5 to 8 year olds again, how long you practice for. What skills do you cover? What areas do you emphasize as far as how long you take in a particular time? You know, if you're taking ground balls, how long do you do it for? Because again, these are young kids. Kind of go over an overview of that.
Yeah, totally. I love this topic. So I heard a great, again, going back to just learning from great mentors, it really was successful. And it's a rule of thumb that I learned from two coaches that really made an impact on me. The age of the student is the amount of time you spend on that drill. So if they're 6 years old, six-minute stations. I don't care if it's 5 6-minute stations. I don't care if it's them throwing a ball up and just clock catching with no glove or different, you know, throwing and catching movement patterns. You can have, as a facilitator, you'd be surprised, not you, but in general, what a six-year-old could do on their own. And you become the facilitator. Let's say you're by yourself with 12 kids. You can have 4 stations of 3 kids and you're walking around and they're doing their own thing for 6 minutes. You know, if you give them 2 or 3 drills or 4 drills, whether it could just be as simple as throwing a ball, hitting a target against a fence. So they're all working on throwing. One station's working on throwing a ball against the wall and doing the alligator mouth and gaining ground. Age of the student, the duration of the drill. So less standing, the less standing around, the better. That's my rule of thumb. Again, it's not even about the drill. It's a matter of they're not standing around and they're rotating. They're rotating. So for example, if you were to do a 30-minute station, a 30-minute, let's just say after the stretching and the talking, you do 30 minutes straight and there's 12 kids, you have four stations, 6 minutes, whatever the time is. And they're just moving. They have four different activities going at the same time. As opposed to, because I'll tell you, when I come into a parent coach or I see it when one of my, you know, staff goes to a practice, you have 10 kids on a line, one parent with the tie half undone, hitting fly balls, and the other parents yelling at the kids for kicking dirt when it's really their fault because they're bored. I don't blame them. I'd be doing the same thing. So why not have six stations of two kids or whatever you want to do to keep the kids moving, and the duration, the age is the duration of the drill.
Yeah. And when you got kids doing things on their own, people say, oh, he's only 6 years old. But, well, yeah, but he does things all the time at home. He's doing all, he's running, he's doing something. So now they're rolling balls back to, you know, back and forth to each other. That's a lot more fun than some coach trying to hit a ball or even roll a ball when they can do it themselves. I love that stuff. I think it helps a lot. Here's the other area. Key word, you said it. I want to really dive on this one. Talking. I think we do too much of it. Explain how you do it and how long you do it and why you do it that way.
So I'm still struggling with that, as you can probably tell already. I love to talk, but while being speech delayed growing up. But I think it's more of a student, you know, because they're all students. They're our students. It should be the most successful coaches I've seen, it's really student-centered. You know, it's amazing what kids could do on their own. When you give a 30-second demo, you become the facilitator walking around stations. A six-year-old could do a lot if you teach it properly. Meaning if you give the proper demo, you become the facilitator and start walking around. It's amazing what they could do. They could do so much more than we think. Like, oh, he's six, he can't do it. No, they actually can. You know, obviously that goes back to the assessment portion. And even as a parent coach, you can assess. And there's different tools to assess, you know. There's different tools. But the answer to that is give the drill, give the station, be the facilitator. And then you as the parent coach can make that assessment based off the student's needs.
You know, another key word, demo. And I want you to hit on that too, because when you demo something, kids see it visually. So explain how that works. How would you demo something? What skill are you showing? Give an example. You're showing a certain skill. You're going to demo that skill. How's that work?
So again, if we were talking about catching, mm-hmm. I try to stay away. I do. It's a fine line. I think it's important to be as the teacher, as the coach, to demonstrate the skill. I mean, the easy answer is also to pick someone that does maybe that's not the highest level skill student, but is doing a great job. Let him be the demoer. So that builds his confidence too. And he learns from his peers. Mm-hmm. We got to walk a fine line there because we don't want to totally rely on the student because you are the master as the coach and you want to demonstrate that. But you know, obviously that's a tremendous self-esteem booster to have a student demonstrate.
Yeah. And anytime you're demonstrating, you know, especially if it's a student, it's your peer. Now all of a sudden, boy, they're really focused because it's one of their guys or gals up there that keeps them maybe a little bit more focused. And now you demo it and then they can go do it. So really when you're demoing, there's less talking, there's more visual, and now they go out and do it. And then you got the time schedule and then you can bring them back and you're doing something else after that. You demo something else and you go back and do it again. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I also, something I started doing also, Peter, is I found a lot of success with this, is creativity. I say that because I just thought of it like a year ago. I said, to one of the, we were doing a catching pattern, right? With like walking and catch. I said, you know what? Cooper, you make up your own cats. Let's follow you. Starts throwing it under his arms. What is he working on? Hand-eye coordination. He's 6 years old. Let's do the Cooper catch. You know, that alone, they just facilitate that. They're working on creativity. They're working on hand-eye coordination, spatial awareness, not bumping into each other. That's so powerful. That's so powerful. That makes a kid, because the big picture here, as you know this better than anybody in the world, it's about growing the game and making more kids play and building their confidence and youth development. So like stuff like that, like drills like that are huge that I started doing. Like make up your own drill.
Yeah, and talk to our parents and coaches again, because you know, part of being a coach at this level, especially, you got to show some enthusiasm. I know when I got done, I was tired, man. Why? Because you showed excitement. How important is that? Instead of having somebody who just kind of monotone, boring, and
totally,
you know, just not totally. Fun.
I probably see individually like, I don't know, 31 kids a week, and like it's half hours. I'm toast, because not in a bad way. I'm toast in a good way. Like I felt good because I know I gave my energy, right? I think the enthusiasm comes from your why and your purpose. And that's for a parent coach. Like your purpose is to make the kids have fun and build their confidence. That is your purpose. They should be having fun, loving the game, loving being at the field. That will never steer you wrong. And that should just bring enthusiasm, because I say this to every parent coach, they're the underbelly of baseball. I am not a fan of get rid of all parent coaches. I think that is not the right idea. I think that we need to work in unison with each other. I mean, yeah, the parents definitely sometimes step on the pros' toes all the time. But if we work in unison, it could be a beautiful thing. I think that's where we're missing here. So to answer your question, they're the underbelly, and that should bring enthusiasm, because they're important. They're pivotal.
Yeah, I agree with you. I believe, you know, and I got to say, you know, parents, whether you like it or not, are part of the program. And like you said, they do sometimes go over the line. You just got to let them know what that line is. But no matter what, they're going to be at home, whether it's a mom or dad working with their kids. And if you're both on the same page, we always call it a three-prong system: educate the parent, the coach, and the kid. And that's exactly what you're doing.
Love it.
The other part, you kind of bring in the key words and give me an idea on what to ask here. You said why. Okay, so, you know, Justin Sherman had a choice. You know, you were an entrepreneur at 13 as a disc jockey, you know, I mean, making money at 13. And you could have gone that avenue because you obviously had a passion for it. You loved it. Why'd you pick baseball?
So I always had, and this goes back to the DJ business, I always had a love for putting groups of people together. You know, I just always loved doing that in the neighborhood, stick ball. You know, I tell kids, it's sad, it's cute. I tell kids about stick ball now, and they're like, what's stick ball? Yeah. So I teach them about stick ball. But like even just playing stick ball, bringing kids together, has always been a subconscious thing that I love to do. I love bringing other kids from other towns together, my friends, their friends, and just getting them together. And I would always just find myself coaching the little ones in our group. So we'd be playing, we're 13, and an 8-year-old would show up and play stick ball. I always just found coaching and trying to get them better. I just get like a high off of trying to grow the game. I've had phenomenal mentors. You know, we talk about Eric Colts. I mean, he's like phenomenal, you know, guys like him, and just always had that love for bringing kids together and being a mentor, being a leader. And I've been so fortunate, you know, Coach Peter Annunziata, he was my high school baseball coach, you know, just great. Not even the X's and O's, obviously they are very knowledgeable, but that's not why I look at them that way. I look at them because of their leadership, the life lessons through baseball. That's what this is all about. And it just inspired me to want to grow the game and just be a part of the development, because I was in their shoes. I was not a stud growing up. I'm still not a stud. You know what I mean? Like, as far as a player, I was not that player, you know, and most kids aren't that player. So I have a soft spot for that. And I want to help grow that part of the game and help build kids' confidence.
Yeah, nothing against guys and gals out there who had great talent. You know, if you had great talent and you played at a high level, God bless you. But I do see a trend of coaches who have played at a lower level, maybe didn't start all the time. They had to study the game more. They had to figure out how to get better. They became better coaches because of that. I really like that. I think that sometimes going through those adversities really helps. Coaches, and Justin, we're coming close to the end here, but coaches will always say something you hear a lot from coaches working with. Again, folks, remember, we're talking about kids working with kids ages 5 to 10 years old here in that age group, 5 to 10. They'll say, I can't keep their attention. Now, you already talked about several things, and it's okay if you repeat it, but you already talked about several things, how to make it fun and all that. You know, but coaches, well, you hear that a lot. I can't keep their attention. I got 12 kids, you know, and they're 6 years old, and it's, and rightfully so, right? I mean, 6 years old, you don't want to sit there, like, as we just talked about, listening to somebody talk for 2 minutes. That's too long. So talk to those coaches when they say, I can't keep their attention. What else can they do during a, I'm guessing 45 minute practice maybe, or
yes,
Matt, maybe at that age. So go ahead and tell, what, how do I keep their attention? Other avenues.
So I think a game changer, Peter, is self-reflection and taking responsibility. So like the example I gave, when I show up to a baseball practice and I'm fortunate to be paid to help these parents run their practices through our company. And I'll just sit there and observe, and I'll see, like, I'm repeating myself, one coach, 10 kids. You need to take responsibility and say, okay, wait a minute. If I was that student, if I was that kid, would I be doing the same thing? The answer is yes. And, you know, you don't, the drill doesn't even have to make sense, but to keep it fun, there's no excuse, especially in 2021. You can't go on your way to a practice, look up two drills for 2 minutes on YouTube and just say, how can I divvy them up and have, if I have 12 kids, make it, you know, four groups of three. It's at this point, it's actually inexcusable. I really believe so. So I think self-reflection, taking responsibility. I mean, I do it every day. Like, you know, that's a life lesson. Like, okay, wait a minute. What did I do? So them kicking dirt and I'm yelling does nothing. Like, I try to make it a point, like, yelling is the sign of zero control. The only time you ever need to yell is if there's immediate danger, which that goes back to practice management skills. And that could be taught, by the way, with different drills, obviously different drills, but just understanding the basic factor of the duration of the skill is the age of the kid, 6 minutes, 6 minute station. That alone will help the kids have more fun, build their confidence, keep them more engaged, and it'll be a domino effect.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, I got to tell you, because when you mentioned stick ball, you know, I'm going back. I think we need to, you know, sometimes we say we shouldn't be old school. I think sometimes we should be old school, because totally. I think we ought to play some stick ball. We ought to once in a while, you know, draw that box on the school wall. I mean, use tape so that way the school doesn't get mad at you. That's, you know, we used to paint it on there. They allowed us. You know, get a rubber ball and just play hitter against pitcher, or, you know, wiffle ball games. Go back and just play, let kids play on their own. How critical is that?
It's amazing. I mean, you'd be surprised. I have hundreds of parents that email me like, what can I do with my child? How about, like, does your kid play wiffle ball? Right. I straight up say that. They look at me like, what? Nothing to do with any crazy drill. Like, no, like, yeah, I'll give them drills. Obviously, I'm not taking away drills. Like, there's drills that definitely specifically target a focus of what you're working on. But how about just, like, how often does your kid throw a tennis ball against the wall? How often does your kid literally just go outside and throw a ball up to themselves? It's amazing how many kids now don't do that. So keep it simple. You know, keep it simple. Stick ball, wiffle ball, phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Love it. Hey, let's finish with this. We'll actually finish with any last comment you have for players and coaches. You know, to help them working with this age group. But the question I wanted to ask was, you mentioned, you know, we all learn from others. Okay. But I also believe that as you're doing things as a coach, you're working on drills, you're working on skills, you got private lessons that you give. You always learn something else on your own through trial and error. You know, I'll give you a quick example, and then you can I'd like to hear, you know, maybe something you learned that you actually created on your own or learned on your own. That doesn't mean somebody didn't have it already. You just didn't know that they had it. You know, an example would be in games. I always tell young coaches with young kids, I say, listen, don't ever, ever, ever tell your kids how many outs there are when they're on a base, you know, and then they'll kind of, you know, they'll look at me like I got three heads, right? You know, what do you mean? Don't tell them how many outs. They got to know the outs. That's the problem. You're telling them the outs. So what they, so you're enabling them. You're actually, you know, telling them the outs. So what happens is they expect that. Well, you know, and I mentioned, you know, did you ever think about asking them the outs? And I'm talking about young kids, you know, you get to high school and college, you can actually have each player give you the outs, right? Well, that's teaching to me. Now, nobody taught me that. I came up with that on my own. Okay. Maybe the only thing I came up on my own, but I came up on my own. So I'm interested in hearing through the 8-9 years that you've been working with these kids, is there something that you came up on your own possibly that you didn't learn from somebody else? I know it throw you a little curveball here, but what do you think? What do you got for me?
It's a great question. Well, this might not cover the answer, but so a lot, you gotta be, I'm so, when I show up to a lesson, when I show up to a practice, like I'm so, this is what we're doing. Command, teacher command. I think I'm learning that a lot of the times, like you could do a lot of teaching. I noticed like I've gotten a lot of success and more flow in a lesson in the practice when I'm saying less. So I don't know if that answers the question. That's off the top of my head. But I would say I learned that. And you just kind of see the flow. If you have the foundation and you give the principles, stepping back, you know, because I'm the type of guy that wants his finger on the pulse constantly. Something I've learned and I've noticed over practices and training just over the last like year or two, like let's just be the facilitator and little things, little touch, like almost like a little paint.
Let them figure it out a little bit.
Yeah. Like don't be so quick to adjust. Like that is teaching. My job as the instructor, and I say this to my coaches, your job is to teach. And I think that the role of a fantastic coach, in my opinion, is to teach them how to self-correct themselves.
Yeah.
So that's something I've learned over the last 2-3 years is kind of like, wait a minute, like, let me just step back for a second. And I'll ask them, like, what'd you feel there? Like, more like questions. It's a conversation as opposed to do this, love do it. That, do this.
Love it. No, I love it. I think that's teaching less. I mean, saying less, and they're going to learn more. You'd be surprised. What about, I'll throw another curveball at you. I love it because I love asking coaches these questions. And that is because I want coaches, you know, you even mentioned it in your on your website, you know, outside the box. You're an outside the box thinker. I think that's important. So you might have learned a drill from somebody, whether it's a hitting drill or some type of drill, but did you ever take that drill and magnify it, change it, modify it for what you felt was going to help that particular player? Because that's what I'm interested in. Is there a drill you've changed and you made it better, more competitive, or something like that?
Totally. And I think that yeah, 100%. There's two folds to that question. I love that question. There are drills that were really geared towards a high school practice that I would make it for an 8-year-old.
Right.
And then that's on the coach or the teacher or the parent to make that modification. Now, that might be for someone that has been coaching for more, you know, a couple of years. I mean, this could be taught to a parent. But I do think I've pushed the limit and said, you know what? Even though it's for a high school kid, let me see if this 7-year-old could do it. Obviously, with some modification. But like I said earlier in the show, like it's amazing what a kid could do. I did that many times over the last couple of years. And I'm like, wow, these kids, like they get it. So I don't know if that's the right answer, but the long-winded answer is 100%. I push the envelope a lot more lately because I don't think we give kids enough credit. That goes back to management and understanding, like kids could do so much and they're sponges. They may not be looking like they're paying attention, but they are paying attention.
Absolutely. How about when, you know, it's, again, you keep giving me keywords, so I'm going to give you one more here. When we're talking about, because, you know, you're going to have to talk to kids, obviously, whether it's 15 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever it is, you got to mention something, right? It could be before practice, during practice. Talk to our parents and coaches about this. You got a lot of times kids that you got 12 of them, you're saying something, one of them's looking over there, right? And first impression, he's not paying attention. Excuse me, let me back up. He's not listening, because, you know, he could be listening, understanding every word, you know, that you're saying, but he maybe wasn't taught to look at you when you're talking. Not all kids have been taught that at early age. Kids that don't look at you, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to hold that against them, because you better make sure that he's really not paying attention, right? So what do you do in that situation with a player like that, where maybe they're not looking directly at you, or maybe there's a talk you give about why they should be looking at you?
Absolutely. So like Glenn Ross, I don't know if I said it right, ABC, always be closing. We're always be coaching. And it's self-reflection as a coach. I mean, again, that is a teaching moment, like eye contact, life skill. And it's so sad because of this COVID situation and Zoom. And I mean, it's beautiful, like stuff like this. You're in Chicago. Am I correct? Yep. Right. I'm in New York. So, I mean, that's the beautiful part, but the negative is they're going to be, the cognitive function is going to be delayed as far as eye contact is not taught. So that goes back to, instead of saying, "Hey, look at me," step back as the parent and say, it's very important when we're speaking to a coach, eye contact. That's a teaching moment. That's youth development through baseball. So every situation is a coaching opportunity. It's not necessarily, here's how you hit a baseball. That's a teaching moment right there. Eye contact.
What happens if your kid says, "Why should I do that?"
It's a sign of respect. It's a sign of respect. And you could say, when an individual sees that you're not making eye contact, it's a sign of not respect. And I know you respect me. So it's just a sign of respect. So, you know, little things like that, ABC, always be closing, always be coaching. That's a coaching moment. And also you go to self-reflection, a little thing that I've noticed, you know, when I'm on a field and there's soccer games going on, maybe it's so powerful. Instead of having them facing the soccer game, you turn the other way and they're looking at you, their backs to the soccer game. Mm-hmm. Little things like that are management skills and help mitigate any behavioral problems. I mean, obviously nothing's perfect, but it mitigates the blow.
Hey, let me give a shout out. And I love that, because I think we're talking about teaching life skills. And that's what they say all the time, right? Baseball, you're teaching life skills. You know, you're teaching the game of baseball. Let me give a shout out to my good Italian buddy, Michael Carlucci. He is the host of The Bottom Line. Check it out on YouTube. He's also on Facebook. Carlucci loves my jacket. So thank you. Italians know how to wear nice jackets. So thank you, Mr. Carlucci, and I'll talk to you soon. Justin, let's finish off with this. There's a lot we could talk about, but there's something we may have missed that you wanted to talk to parents, coaches, or players about, something you want to mention, kind of last closing, you know, words.
No, absolutely. So, you know, again, I really truly say this with all sincerity. Like, I'm such a big fan of yours. I watch tons of your podcast videos. I watch them all the time. Even if I'm just in the car, I go on YouTube, listen, I'd share with my baseball buddy. So, you know, I really appreciate you having me. All I could say is keep it simple, keep it fun, keep them moving. You are the underbelly of youth baseball, meaning parents, baseball, softball. And, you know, it's all about the kids. It's all about the kids, and it's a beautiful game. I will give a plug on Monday, March 1st. We're giving a coaches clinic. I would love for any parent to join us. You could just go on my website. You know, I have parents from all over the country joining. I'd love to have you there. And it's going to be Monday, March 1st at 6:15 Eastern time. And I will be covering it, because ultimately I just want to help as many parents as possible, because that's going to help the kids, which in turn will help grow the game, because I have a love affair like you do with the game. So anything to help the game.
Yeah, you got to give that plug, because it's so important. And we're going to put it on our show notes. We'll put it on our Facebook, all over social media. We'll try to get more people there. I can't agree more about the volunteers. That's why I want to give a shout out to volunteers. We'll close it on this. The volunteers that, and those are moms and dads that are coaching the game. Those are volunteers. They are, and I wish people understand this. They are the largest baseball coaches group. I can't say organization because they're not organized like high school, college coaches are pros. But if you take and add up all the high school, college coaches and pro coaches in the world, it doesn't even come close to all the volunteers in the game of baseball around 100%. The world. And that gives you an idea, the strength of where the foundation of the sport is and exactly what you're talking about. We keep educating those parents, keep doing what you're doing, Justin. I think you're doing a great job. And I think it's so important. We need more coaches like that to help our parents and coaches. So, and I know my buddies that are on like Michael Carlucci, they're going to think that maybe I traded, you know, some time for you coming on. You got to give me some good plugs. But you know, that was great. That was very nice. You know, what you said, I think that was fantastic. I really appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you for having me. It's really an honor and what a pleasure. What a pleasure.
All right, folks, that is Justin Sherman of Justin Time Baseball. Go to his website, justintimebaseball.com. We didn't just talk baseball. We talked about how he persevered, you know, talking about, you know, a speech delay when he was younger, but then he started his own business at 13. What a great story. Now runs his own business, helping parents, coaches, and players at the younger levels, the foundation of our sport. So again, go to justintimebaseball.com. Special thank you to Justin. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. And of course, special thanks to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. Don't forget, just do us one favor. It's all we ask. The shows are free. We got over 200 of them. Go to the podcast audio, baseballoutsidethebox.com, and hit subscribe. Also, go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo, subscribe. That just helps us get the show, helps us keep the show going, to be honest with you. And I want to thank everybody that sends me emails, because I'm going to be honest with you, as we're on the air here, even live on Facebook, this is not easy to do because it takes a lot of time. And there have been times, trust me, that I have said, why am I doing this? And look, I learn, because I learn every time I have a guest on. That's the main reason I do the show. The second reason that I think I'm helping spread some great stuff in the U.S. and around the world to educate coaches, players, and parents. But there are times where I sit back saying, man, why am I doing this? You know why I do it? Every time I get that email that somebody says to me, man, we really like your show. They take the extra time just to send that message in a busy day. That's what keeps me going. So thanks for all those messages that everybody's sending. And Justin, thanks for your message, because, you know, I kid you a little bit about, you know, saying that, but, you know, it means a lot. And it really keeps me going in what I'm doing. So folks, again, stay safe, stay healthy. God bless you. And we'll see you on the next show.